Hello, Radiant Light Beings. Welcome to Awakenings, part of the converging flow from that harmonic convergence of love, light, and understanding that we are all connecting to more and more. It's great to be here, great to connect with all of you that I see in the chat, all that are unseen but always felt. Awakenings is, I say, part of the converging flow. It's one of the places where people are meeting from all walks of life, all persuasions, from all areas, all arenas that are awakening, waking up, or living awake. This is really the place for science and spirituality to converge. This is the place to look at God as an energy, that life force, pranic energy that is us, moving through us as us. This is a place to confirm that and affirm that. And so we meet to dialogue and interview different spiritual teachers, healers, conscious beings, visionaries, awakened leaders, authors, people of all walks of life that are awake, awakening, and integrating this into their everyday living. And we want this to be your place. This is your place. Those of you in the chat room know this very much, that sacred space of empowerment, as it has been renamed by Tammy and Reiki Master, also known as Drita, that's been renamed, which I love. I think it's so appropriate. By the way, before I forget, that music that we're playing at the beginning is Golden Sun by Thunderbeat, amazing healer and musician, and it's off of her Ancient Sun CD, and she'll be actually on again doing some live activation with us, and we may be also planning a workshop, a play shop to connect. So we're really having a good time here. I'm really enjoying being on Awakenings and connecting with all of you twice weekly and sometimes more, which is great. And I love your emails about your growth, your changes, what you're integrating, and also your suggestions, your feedback. And some people suggest also guests, and I'm totally open to that. Oh, Tammy in the chat is saying you got her CD in the mail. Love it. Yeah, I know, me too. I've been playing a couple of them. I think it's Sunrise that I'm really into right now. And let's see. Sunrise and Sands of Time. So I'll have to listen to more. I tend to play the same ones over and over for a while. I'm very much into music and very much into books. So this program is so right up my alley, because I get to meet some amazing beings and read some great books and hear some great music. And also, for me, having lived with this conscious awareness forever, I mean, not to say that I didn't have, and I have a few friends, I would say 3 to 5 really good friends that are also consciously on a path. Oh, Tammy saying it does wonders for cleaning the house. Yeah, it's a very inspiring music. It's Ancient Sun. I'm going to put it in the chat, and those of you that are listening, the CD that we're talking about is Ancient Sun by Thunderbeat. And she was just amazing. She's got a lot of laughter. It's a lot of Heyoka medicine. It's a lot of laughter there. So she's always fun to connect with and chat with. And she loved being on Awakenings, by the way. She really loved everybody. And when she comes back on, because Tammy in the chat is writing about the chakra clearing one, actually going to do a live meditation with that. So that will be great. It always fun to do. Just like, wasn't that great, David McCready, from the author of the Simulator, I'm going to put that in the chat too, was on last week, Wednesday, what am I saying, last week, which he's great also. And we did some, energy processes, energy exercises that really kept us in alignment. So, Tammy, he was on. You were here, right? Hi, Mystic Light. Hi. Hi, everyone. Yeah, he was great. Yeah, he was, we're calling him from the UK, so it's quite a bit later, but And he's the one that suggested it after the last show. He said, you know, I wouldn't mind coming back on again. It would be great, you know, and maybe do some live energy exercises or processes. And I said, yeah, we would love it. Of course we'd love it, you know. So we're always open to that. People coming back, you know, people of similar resonance coming back. And what I find, too, is when the guests come back, you know, you're able to, you know, we're able to dive deeper, get to know them more. They get to know us more, more questions. You know, it's just becomes, it's a greater community, greater family. And Tammy is saying in the chat, time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana. Oh, that's funny. I love it. I love it. I'm going to give you a little smiley there. So let me hear how everyone is doing. How is everyone doing right now? There's lots of change occurring, and in a way, because of the pattern, energy pattern that we're in right now, for many it seems like nothing is happening. So there is a lot of seemingly stagnant energy. What I want to share with everyone is there is a lot of movement. However, the movement is a bit underground right now. So think of it as a river or stream that's running under the ground, and it's soon to come forward. Soon there will be movement that you can see, that you can touch, that you can taste, a more tangible, more earth-directed movement. For now, some of the movement is a bit underground. Yeah, and Tammy is putting gestation, yes. Lots of energy. You can feel it, but it doesn't necessarily have the direction perhaps that a lot of people are wanting right now. And part of that being is there's a real redirection of energy, meaning that we're in a redirect. That's what I like to call it, is that it's a redirection of energy, meaning your energy somehow is changing, your energy pattern or the direction. For some of you, it's going to be even the quality of energy. You know, you're going to find yourself drawn to different things. You're going to find yourself different things, different activities. You're going to find yourself noticing that you are in another direction, that something new is coming through you, something new is emerging. So it's really important to connect in with that and just watch the energy, feel the energy. Connect in with the subtle energy. This is because what you're going to be connecting with is that you are, it's always there, but when we're a lot in our little mind or local mind or beta consciousness, that focused awareness, we're very focused on what's tangible, what we can hold, what we can feel. Tammy's saying for her it's time to act only when I'm clear on intention. Ooh, that's a very, very good point. And Mystic Light is saying that you're having, okay, Mystic, you're saying you're having huge amounts of changes in your life and energy. The trick is directing it towards where I want it to take form. Yeah. Now, I want to share something with you. I would say yes, but I would also say see where your intuitive awareness is leading you. I do tons of meditation on that. That's my main focus, is to get centered. Like we did in some of the exercises, actually, with David on Wednesday. I do some things that are similar. You know, I may have some different names for it. But if I'm centering into my, you know, doing the yoga breath, centering into the hotter center, the abdominal area and the solar plexus, if I can center into that area, then you can begin to feel the subtle energy and where it wants to lead you. Not, we don't want to lead anymore from the ego mind. That's been a lot of the issue, you know, which has been fun. It's kind of, yeah, absolutely, by trick it, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we want the ego mind to be the caboose. We love the ego mind, but we want it to be the caboose. Otherwise, it's like, you know, when you go shopping with a two-year-old and the two-year-old's pulling you in all these directions. Wow, Spirit Light, hi. You lost your job and you feel a lot of great expectation. Good, yeah. a lot of change. Yeah, exciting future. You know, and I've been hearing that a lot. So I'm going to touch on a couple of things that came from a workshop that I had been working with, and I think this really speaks to this. Some of you have been hearing me speak of a major focus for 2009 and beyond. But this 2009, you ever seen those revolving doors, those glass doors, like they have them in larger cities, maybe smaller too. I've only seen them in larger cities that revolve. So think of 2009 as you're going in that revolving door, and some things are happening inside the revolving door. Now, you might get stuck. Some people get stuck there, right? Some people, and I don't mean stuck in in a pejorative or negative way. I mean, some people last longer in the revolving door. And some people, if you notice, they don't know what to do. Do I push? Do I go back out? Do I keep going? Oops, somebody's coming the other side. What do I do? So for some people, the energy redirection will be like that. Some will be in a holding pattern. Some will just wait there for a while. And some will go through that revolving door, and all of a sudden, woof, I'm out. I'm like, oh, my God, look it, I'm in another building. What's going on here? This is kind of interesting. So in regards to that revolving door that we're all going through, that the right now the intensification for 2009 is for that, that you go in, you're going in your life, and you're going into an energy pattern, almost like if anybody's been to Hawaii, you can drive to, one side of an island and you're in another, weather pattern, weather zone. So it's not that anybody's necessarily doing anything wrong. It's just we're really being changed up right now. And there's also the recognition that we're also the change point. We're all at this change point, connecting more causally, connecting more to the cause, original cause, our source. Again, that means we're going beyond the ego mind or the rational mind, but then coming back in and including that, in a sense, retraining that. That's the re-uploading of the software, or the firmware, even hardware, the body, being changed on the outside as well as the inside to realign to more fulfillment, more expression of love, light, wisdom, and awareness. So the main focus for 2009, emphasized focus, is right livelihood and right relationship. Now, that's going to continue on. In fact, that's going to continue on to this whole Aquarian age because we're moving into a space of more and more fulfillment, living more expressive, if you will, living more not from dogma and rules and beliefs, but adaptability and flexibility. So, of course, we'll have, rules and, it's better to do this or that or societal rules or rules within our house or our own personal rules, but they will not override what is intuitively aware or aware from source. We'll be able to see what is the greater good in that moment. This is why and I put it in the chat and I'll put it again or if somebody wants to put it, really working with your projections right now is really important to really get to that space that you know what is a projection and are you perceiving. So if you go to my website, selfandlight.com, and I'm putting it in the chat, and then go to transitionchange.html. The number sign projections. This will lead you to a whole process of awareness because a lot of people have talked about, and there's a lot of books on projection that everything we see happening is maybe a mirror of something that's going on with inside us. In other words, it's an inner state projected out. Yeah, Tammy, clean up. I do that inner work. Yay. Yeah, you got it. You got to do the inner work. But we don't only live by projection. Now think about this from a common sense point of view. If you lived only by projection, you would be egocentric because everything would be about you. Exactly, Tammy. Take back those projections. It said not sight not found. Let's see, maybe I'm not writing it right. It's under the transition and change on selfandlight.com. So maybe someone can find what I'm find that and then cut and paste and put in the chat. It would be great. So we're not just egocentric beings. So when we're able to move more into perception, and that's what being psychic is, or that's what being channeling, psychic coming from psyche, meaning that you're connected on a soul level. You're connected to your psyche, soul, / spirit, meaning that you can see beyond what is physically there or what is it physically in form. You can see what's happened before, what's happening now, what's happening, you know, in the future. You can see beyond that person, even if you're doing a reading on someone, beyond what they're even acting out or what they're living out. You can see their potential or where they're going. You can see their soul's imprint or empath. When you move more into perception, you also become more telepathic. So you immediately start integrating your sixth sense, which we all have. You stop living just from the five senses. You integrate the sixth sense. And you begin to not only integrate that psychic sense, but you begin to live by it. You begin to trust it. You begin to see how it plays out. So, but it's important to know if you're in the middle of a projection or are you perceiving something. So this exercise on the website on selfandlight.com, and I guess it's selfandlight.com/transitionchange.html/projections. I might have my web designer make it a little more easy. It's hard to get to my tool. We're redesigning my site because it's more, it's very informational. So there's a lot of information that you can get to more easily. We're going to create as we're making the changes. So what is what I suggest to people to do is, you know, once you learn the process, and you can just download the, you know, obviously it's gratis, it's free, just download and print it out, is in taking back the projection, you begin to see, okay, is this an inner state of that something I'm not aware of? And you do that by getting in that meditative state. Or is it something I've gone through before? Is it a pattern? Am I learning something? You know, you kind of go through your own. And when you're more and more clear and you're more and more in the meditative state, you don't fool yourself. You know what's going on. You know which part is projection. And then you also begin to move into perception. It happens very easily. And if you're really in a true perception, you will find that you're not in duality. You're not in a judgment about that person or that situation. It just is what it is. And I loved how David McCready said that on Wednesday, that there'll be some humor to it. You know, it may be not all patterns are bad, quote unquote bad. Sometimes people think, oh, you know, being in that pattern, you know, you have this kind of pattern and that's bad. No, not necessarily. We come in with an energetic pattern. We come from the energetic matrix. So we come in with a pattern that attracts what is resonating with us, that is in our play of consciousness and how it fits into the greater play of consciousness of the all that is. So certain patterns, you know, if you have the pattern of a healer, you know, and, you know, a pattern of a were-one, or a pattern of a being that happens to like animals or animal beings, or a pattern that you tend to like blue, or, you know, you're going to work with blue things or whatever. You can look in your life and you can see that there is an overriding pattern or a theme, and that comes from the soul. However, there are things that are constructed from the constructed ego, beliefs, ideas, or thought forms that are not coming from our expanded consciousness or awareness. These are coming from, you know, the disowned self, not wanting to own certain parts of us because they didn't get understood or acknowledged, or they even got suppressed. And then we began to, you know, suppress them. They got repressed. So what we're doing is as Don said earlier on, Don Childers, author of Inside Out, we all know him from BTR, put in that we are cleaning house, so to speak. And so we know how to do that by taking back the projections and moving into perception. And then we begin to really know where we're being led. So I asked you, where are you being led? Notice the openings in your life right now. If something seems to be stagnant or no longer relevant, handle the fear that's making you hold on. And some of you might find that there's previous plans that you had that no longer apply. And in a sense, the overriding theme in 2009 is adaptability and flexibility in relationship and livelihood. It's really moving into that space of that we are creator beings. Speaking in a sense of creation and being creative, our guest today, which I'm really tickled to have back on, she came on the former incarnation of Awakenings when it was just airing on Cosmic Dimensions. She is a very not only awake, aware being. Actually, I first met her in my meditation class at Agape Spiritual Center. But Gemini Adams, who's going to be coming on in a minute, is actually very creative. I would say she actually even lives from that place of self-expression, but self-expression or creativity in the sense of service, being of service. She holds workshops both in her birthplace, the United Kingdom, and the United States. She's the author of Legacy of Love. She's also been gifted the award of the Winston Churchill Memorial Trust. She was subsequently provided a grant to further her research. And over a three-month period, Gemini explored the role of love in palliative care, visiting and interviewing directors of leading hospices, palliative care, and bereavement organizations across the United States. Now, her research has proved valuable. It's been amazing for her. She's taken this research and integrated it in a way to express to people how you can experience loss and how to make it a source of love. Also, during 2007, Gemini produced a short documentary together with the Sacred Dying Foundation. The film, entitled Legacy of Love, won Audience Award for the Best Documentary at the Elevate Film Festival in Los Angeles. Okay, let's bring her on. Hello, Gemini.
Hello, Michelle. How are you?
I am doing great. Great to connect back with you. Long time.
Absolutely, yes. I'm sure you've been busy like me.
Yes. Now, you've been traveling quite a bit also, haven't you? I feel like that for some reason.
I have. I spent part of last year in Asia, actually, traveling around Thailand, Bali, and Cambodia, mostly writing, but also I feel whenever I take one of those trips, it's also sort of developing and evolving myself and my work along the way. I was actually attending other people's workshops too and learning and growing. And then I've been sort of toing and froing from England. I'm actually about to leave in a week for my book tour, which is going to be traveling to 16 cities across England in 4 weeks. So, yes, busy is the right word for it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I want to say that Sylvia and Tammy in the Sacred Space of Empowerment, also known as Chat Room, are saying hello. And welcome. They're glad that you're
here. Back.
So now, what were you doing in Asia, in the Far East?
I actually went to do a workshop on something called transforming cellular memory, which I felt was complementary to the work that I'm doing, and with a guy called Don Hansen, and his work really looks at the fact that. Trapped within each of us, really, we're running patterns. I heard, what you were just talking about on the show before, and that we can release those patterns when they're negative by just calling in spirit, and it can be actually a very painless process. I think, we're all sort of conditioned to thinking that to overcome our challenges, we must battle and fight and, spend months in therapy or, days in retreat centers or whatever. And it was incredible to watch. I mean, he sort of has people stand up and work through. And you really see a physical change in that person's body when spirit has come through and helped clear something. And it was extremely powerful work. And I felt very privileged to be a part of that. And we actually, part of that work is about surrender. And we actually took a boat trip, the sort of 24 of us in this workshop. And surrender was what we had to do, whether we liked it or not. This boat took us up the river in Cambodia, and we had, a tiny little dribbling tap on board and no beds. We all slept on mattresses out on the deck, being nibbled away by mosquitoes and insects and all sorts of things. So it was quite an adventure. Not for the faint-hearted.
No, exactly. You know, it's interesting that you say that because in some of the processes that I work with, and I'm glad more knowing this, there's more, well, two things I want to share with you. One is I think one reason why it doesn't take so long is also because we've shifted our perception about how long something has to take, and, you know, and the resonant field is holding more of that psychic spiritual energy. There's less density. So I definitely see in my practice things, you know, moving more quickly. But in my mind, they always did, or they could, if you're connecting in with your, you know, higher self or expanded self or spirit or source, you're calling in that energy. And if you're, you know, doing processes or healing from that space, it just, it could be a holy instant. It could just happen instantaneously, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, those patterns. And if people would think of themselves more as energy, we did this in a workshop that I was facilitating this past weekend, and that if you see your pattern more as energy, it's much easier to move energy around than it is to think of this thing that you've had, you know, whether it's other lifetimes, other dimensions, or from your family. You know, that's like so heavy, you know, that connotation is like, yeah, my mom did this, and my dad did so, and my brother and I did this, and my uncle did, you know, instead of just going, wow, this is just an energy pattern. Even a belief,
absolutely.
I mean, right? If you think of a belief in your mind or word, you could poke your hand through it. It's nothing. It's just poof. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think as we're connecting more with our energetic, you know, and light beingness that we are, I think it is easier to shift.
I think, you know, when you start working on yourself in this way and you start going, you know, down the route of self-exploration and development and growing a spiritual practice, I'm sure you found this on your own journey. Initially, I would find I would go back to old patterns and that they would sort of overtake me. I wasn't even aware I was doing them again. And then something would bring me to a point of self-realization. And I would see that for 5 months, 4 months, I had been stuck in this kind of, you know, reactionary pattern to something. And as time went on and the more work I did, I would find that those types of reactions would suddenly be only, they would only last for a few days or even an hour or even a minute. I have the same response I once had. But then I can just dissolve it instantaneously, much to my absolute amazement. And whereas I know that in the past, some of those reactions I was caught up in for months, years even, and you know, that the time that got wasted or not, I mean, I learned from it, and you know, that's part of my teaching, but it's I think our own process speeds up, and simultaneously what's taking place in the world is the rapid pace of change is also affecting us, so that you know, I think we're all having to kind of, you know, update and reinstall our software programs to kind of catch up with what's going on in the outside world.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, you know, you've got, if your software is slow, update it, baby.
Exactly.
Software,
yeah. and I really do think of us like that now. I mean, we are literally a cell. We are a computer. We have all these programs that we've had put in us. And, you know, we didn't necessarily get any say in which programs, you know, we didn't walk into Circuit City and say, oh, I'd really like this program and I'd quite like that one there. We just got given a bundle when we arrived, and, you know, which came through family and friends and the influences and religions and everything else. And I think that the idea, and this is still very difficult for people to grasp in some respects, that we can just sit there and we get to choose. It's such a powerful thing. And I think, you know, in so many different areas of society, people have felt that they have not had choice for whatever reason, either because, you know, they were women or they were of different ethnicity or they didn't have money or whatever it might have been. The idea that we actually have choice is extremely powerful, but seems to be something that, you know, is such a hard notion for people to actually truly be able to take on board.
Hmm. Well, I think part of it is so new. And one thing I think people tend to forget, I say this because when I suggest this to people, they're like, oh, my God, you're right. We're not only clearing for ourselves, but the collective or the race consciousness or the ancestral consciousness that we've come into this time frame and resonant field with. So when you're doing your own inner work or clearing, you're clearing not only for yourself but for others. And like you said, Gemini, when we came in, this was there. I mean, our energetic pattern had to, you know, resonate with it to incarnate on this density, but still we came into a lot of stuff. You know, I know for myself too, in the beginning of, you know, growing up, certain things that I just for sure did not even believe in. But we all have to recognize we have enough of a resonance to be here, even if we didn't create some of the plays or the dramas or the rules. But, you know, it's, we can uncreate it in a sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one time wearing that or knowing. To me, it's like going to I don't know, a party or something, or, you know, where there's a buffet or a cocktail party where they're handing the hors d'oeuvres. And even if there's only a certain type of food and you don't want that, chances are if you wait, you know, another tray will come around with something that you want. So we don't have, I think mm-hmm. people have to recognize, right, you don't have to buy into certain things. You just have to have faith, trust, belief,
and wait.
Yeah, and have that inner knowing that something will come around.
Or you just go up and ask, and this is something
I like that too.
We walked. I'm going to give you a very clear example of this. We walked into a restaurant just a week ago. I was actually with my partner, and the place was packed. There were all these people hovering around in the entranceway, waiting for tables. And I spotted a space at the bar, at the front of the restaurant. We went up to the hostess and we said, you know, we'd like a table for two. And she said, well, there's a long wait. You know, would you like this beeper thing? And I said, well, can we eat at the bar? She said, yes, absolutely. I said, great. So we walked straight to the bar where there was this great big space. And there was only one chair. And there were two of us. And I said, well, let's see if we can get a chair. So we went and we asked at the end of the bar. And the very lovely busboy there said, sure, I'll bring you a chair. So within 5 minutes, we were sitting down ordering our food at the bar. And everybody else was still sitting there waiting for this, you know, for a table. And if you don't ask, actually, you don't get.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes even just having that intention that you're open, really open for something and not necessarily needing to wait or wanting to wait. I mean, sometimes even that posture just moves, you know, and obviously you guys had that. You came in and you were open, you know, and said, okay, mm-hmm. hey, what, is there another place or what can we do here? But, you know, that, again, there takes a certain kind of courage to move away from that herd mentality that mm-hmm. says, you know, because there's a mentality that says, oh, you know, be social, just wait. You know, wait your turn, wait, you know, mm-hmm. be a good little girl, good little boy. And then there are those that just say, hey, you got a table. I've even had, I'm telling Gemini, situations like that where a table, something has been cleared and people were waiting and they didn't know. Like when it's kind of a free seating situation,
mm-hmm.
people are waiting, there's this like confusion and you kind of just beeline and go through and you're like, oh, there's a table, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, I didn't know we could get our own table. And then the host comes by. This happened to a situation. Our host is, oh, yeah, yeah, it's free. You know, everybody, it's free seating, you know, whenever you get there. And it's like, okay. You know? It's like, but once you have to be aware, you know. And I know mm-hmm. I've been in the sleepy state, too. I've snoozed. I've missed things because, you know, I've been off-centered or whatever and, you know, didn't see what was there.
I think there's also something too around that, and it's something I've done a lot of work on in myself about feeling deserving of things. You know, many of us are brought into environments when we're younger where, for whatever reason, we don't get given what we want or what we'd like, and our dreams don't get fulfilled, and which sets up often a pattern of feeling like we don't deserve to get what we truly believe we could have, which is that sort of, you know, catch 22 scenario. And, you know, just it's a difficult thing to even pinpoint, because to me it's a feeling, and mm-hmm. it's something which is a very subtle level, requires you to learn about sort of giving to yourself first, I think is the best way to work out of this. And the more you give to yourself, the more you start to feel deserving of good treatment and good reward and other things like that. And you know, those things don't have to be extravagant. I've recently set up a practice of when I've, you know, feel like I've just achieved something or really worked very hard and want to treat myself. One, because I wanted to give myself a reward that was also going to benefit me. I've started buying large boxes of strawberries as my sort of self reward, and just small little things like that, and just treating yourself well. And I feel that sends out a very powerful message to the universe, which is I'm treating myself well, and therefore every, you know, the world, the universe is also going to treat me well too.
You mentioned that's an interesting concept, and I think so true, and one that we all need to, you know, connect in more with, is that really on some level is how we are treating ourselves. You know, if I'm treating myself well, or I live, you know, have my that abundant feeling, you tend to draw mm-hmm. that in more, and you tend to glow more too. Your face is glow, you know, tapping into that. And I think too, if people just look around and see, what do you have that do you really feel like, even if it's a certain cup that you like, or a certain yes. pen, or, yes. right, or a certain sweater, something that you have really luxuriate in that, connect in with that and say, wow, I'm really abundant because I have this. I really mm-hmm. like this. This really, you know, mm-hmm. it feels good to me. One thing I want to ask you, Jim, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead, yeah.
No, I was going to say, on that note, do you think that sometimes some of the, perhaps people not feeling as abundant or fulfilled is maybe on some level they don't know what's fulfilling to them? Maybe they're looking to the left or the right of them to other people to say, well, what does abundance mean? You know, maybe somebody else's standards.
Yeah, I think that's something that everybody's guilty of, actually, and partly because of the way that our success is defined in our society, and success primarily being defined through magazines, which is, you know, sort of designer watches, handbags, you know, flashy watches, you know, sparkling, clean, perfectly waxed cars and you know, multi-million
yeah.
dollar mansion beach homes. Makes it a little
yeah.
difficult to
yeah.
to
doesn't sound bad right
know,
now.
No, but you know, I think actually doing a check in and saying, well, what is success to me? And
yeah.
you know, my model for success personally has changed radically in the last 5 years, and having, you know, spent my 20s frittering away every penny that I earned on some of the things I just mentioned, and not
yeah.
feeling in the slightest bit satisfied, and trying to go to the next cool bar in London and you know, compete with that model, which is
yeah.
sort of presented to us as the one that we're sort of meant to follow, and really not being happy, getting into debt, just not finding any fulfillment in any of it,
mm-hmm.
actually. And I mean, for me, I then took a pretty radical decision. I decided to kind of issue that whole thing, and I went off to Africa and did an aid project for 3 months, and lived out of a tent with 12 other people with nothing but a rucksack, a pair of shorts, a t-shirt, a pair of boots, and I think I had my Walkman with me, and that was pretty much it. And I was very, I mean, I don't know if lucky is the right word, but it was a very challenging experience, but it was a choice that I made to go and do that, and it gave me an incredible perspective on life. And it also gave me a really different model around what success was. And I had, I mean, those 3 months for me were the best possibly 3 months of my life. I mean, it's such a wonderful time in community with this group of people. There was about 100 of us on the expedition, hanging around the campfire every night, literally sort of singing songs and talking. And by day, we built a school, and we dug out latrines for the villages, and we did all sorts of things. And I came back from there with a real realization that the kind of model I'd been following before was never going to bring me actual happiness, actually. And since that experience, I've really looked at, you know, to me, fulfillment is being with friends and family. It's being able to take my creative ideas and bring them into fruition. And I don't really desire many of those things that I want
yeah.
had a need for or thought I had a need for. Of course, I need a certain amount of money to survive off and buy food and, you know, buy treats and things. But, I feel this is really in line with what's taking place in the financial world right now. And the fact that if we carry on under that model of success, which is really also about excessive consumption, not only are we not happy, but we're destroying the planet as a result of it. And there has to be more balance. And, I just think that we all need to look at what does success really mean to us. Is it about having more stuff, which sits there and you know, gets worn out, decomposes and gets thrown away and just literally passes through our ownership temporarily? Or is it about building friendships and relationships and community and, you know, developing love and service and all of the things which are the things which really bring you a sense of lasting fulfillment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody in the chat, Spirit Light, is writing, unemployment ain't so bad when you feel abundant.
Yeah.
I'd just like
to say something on that. I mean, I've had extreme highs and lows in my life, and there was one point when I was unemployed, and I had a few pounds at the time I was in England left in my pocket. And I remember sitting there and thinking, you know, first of all, I had no idea where on earth I was going to get any more money from at that point in time. But also thinking, somehow knowing that something would show up and having faith, but really thinking, if that's all I had, what would I really do? And I was actually hungry. And I remember thinking, well, how would I eat? And I thought, well, I could probably go to the fish and chip shop and say, could I paint a mural for you? And would you give me food in return for that? Or could I come and give you a massage? Or could I come in here and wash up for you? Or something? I mean, what that experience gave me was the realization that every single one of us is extremely creative. We have abundant skills and gifts to share. It could be writing, it could be singing, it could be dancing, it could be painting, it could be helping in any way, shape, or form. And when you are out of money, either because you've been made redundant, you've, you know, lost a home, or any of those very life-transforming experiences that I know many people are suffering at the moment, there's something always inside of you that you've probably been pushing away for, you know, half your life, that's a gift that you have, that if you start using will actually ultimately translate into earnings for you. And it's a potentially amazing opportunity to really go deep in and pull that gift out and start using it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing you said too, you touched on, you know, creativity. I feel that we have been, for the last 10, 15 years, it's a bit in a crisis point now, or choice point, but we have been slowly but surely moving out of consumerism into creativism. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think now, you know, like you said, you look around, you'll have things to do and live abundantly if you're following what you want to do and look within. Somebody else was talking about in the chat room about knowing themselves, you know, and mm-hmm. I think it was Michael, important to know oneself. The game of just the monetary exchange, if you think about it, that's like telling yourself that you're going to only eat one type of food, or that's all that's important, or one type of physical activity, or, you know, any activity. We would think we're in prison if someone said, you know, you can only eat this kind of food forever, and you can, and that's what's important, or only do this kind of workout forever, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. in that level. So I think, again, as people are opening up more now, yes, a lot of it is coming from crises and challenge, but I think ultimately it's about opening everyone up to that we're all more. It's about creativity instead of over consumption, as you put.
And we're not here to be enslaved by somebody else to perform.
Yeah.
In
freedom.
Some, you know, monkey type fashion. You know.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's what we came here to do as individuals. Everybody has a gift, and we all came to share that gift. And it's not about getting up and going to some job you detest at you know, 9 to 5 every day, and only ever being able to actually express 10% of who you really are and what your full capacity is. I mean, we've all got just incredible insights and talents that are hidden away. And I personally feel that the education system is unfortunately somewhat responsible for this position we're all stuck in. I was a bit of a rebel at school and refused to buy into the system, really. And in hindsight, I'm grateful because I feel it meant that I didn't sort of get stuck into the thinking that I had to find a way to fit into the system. I felt more I was able to be creative and find a way to pull my visions out into the world, I guess. And I think that I love that word, that we're moving to creationism instead of consumerism. That's a fantastic concept.
Thank you. Yeah, that's been my little message the last, 6 months or so, and especially as people say, oh my God, everything's kind of breaking down, and and also the 2012, everybody freaking out like it's the end of the world, and I said, yeah, it would have been the end of the world if we would have stayed on consumerism, because what happens when you eat everything up inside?
And I think the hidden message too in the 2012 stuff is that it's not the end of the world, it's the end of the world as we have known it for a very long time.
Yeah. And we had to have the end of the world as we know. We had to change direction. Otherwise,
Sorry.
Okay. I know you're on a cell phone, so sometimes you don't hear me. That's okay. Go ahead, Gemini. Go ahead.
I see this wonderful world after 2012 of green technology, everybody, us being able to live off the world's resources in a healthy way, as in the resources that are limitless, like, the heat of the sun and the water and the air, and actually moving towards exactly that, the creationism concept, where everybody's somehow, some way expressing their true purpose and living from a place of purpose, and educating people that way. I'm not quite sure yet how the reward system is going to work, whether we'll still have a monetary system or not. It seems from, reading news headlines and things like, Davos and other things, that even the world's greatest economists can't quite figure it out right now. So I think we really are in a massive state of flux about that. And interesting, something I'd like to share on that note. I've various projects that I've done, I've self-funded or started with no funding whatsoever. And what I've found is a great way to get things started when you're really sitting there and you feel like you have no resources is actually to offer to do trades with people. So there's no money to exchange, but you just, the one thing you have to do is write out exactly what you're agreeing to do for each other. So it's like a contract, but you're very clear on the terms. So, you're giving up so many hours a week to that person to help them, whether it's clean their house or walk their dogs or give them advice on finances, or, in my case, help them with their writing and help them, design a book proposal for the book that they're working on or something. And in return, they're going to give you X amount of time for editing services or X amount of time for web design. And, there's especially in this climate, I think hundreds of people out there who are prepared to swap time like that. So if you're, if you're in that sort of place where you're thinking, gosh, I'd really like to start this business, or I'd really like to, start my writing, or I'd like to start, photography or something, there's somebody out there who would be prepared to help trade services with you to get you started.
Absolutely. There's so many. And to me, then, we tap into our creativity also, and that's also part of the abundance, is not just the monetary. Abundance doesn't mean it's living from the overflow, of connections, networking, feeling, connected to oneself, nature, like you say, the trading or the bartering or, sharing. When I think of that, it's and I've always had that model in mind. It's just, and part of it, I think, too, coming from at one point a film and TV background, we always did a lot of projects. Even as a model, we would do projects together on spec, or, hey, I want to do this picture, or this, I have this idea. I'll do this for you if you'll help me with this. Yeah, yeah, come on, mm-hmm. let's collaborate. And apparently even in that field, that's not so much anymore because everyone was going for the almighty dollar. I was like, really? You know, I mean, there still are people that, you know, do that, but again, I think somewhere along the line, you know, and like you said, through the commercialization of things, what we're seeing on TV and such, you know, became, if you have this much money or you look this way or you look like you have this much money, you know, if you look, mm-hmm. and many people scrambling for that instead of, you know, connecting, forgetting about the connection. Am I really sharing my life with people? Am I really connecting? Because what I see, just kind of peeking in on this, I find if people are too overly directed only on a monetary, receiving only monetarily, they really tend to not have time to share.
Yes, definitely.
Have you noticed that? It's like
yes.
the sharing, the connecting is out the window. You know.
It's yeah. And it's something, you know, I'm very busy at the moment, and I'm very conscious of that, actually, is when you get sort of so caught up in being focused on a goal that you stop having time for family, friends, contribution, community, something's gone awry.
That's a very good point. So how would you suggest to people to bring themselves into balance? Because we all get that. I mean, we all have tons of, you know, I have projects. We get very full, very fulfilled. How do you balance that out?
Because I think I've learned to appreciate that it's actually about the journey, not about the end goal. Because I don't know about you, but every time I've got something that I was working for, it feels great for about 10 minutes, an hour, a day or two, but then that dissolves. And really the bit that's interesting is the bit in between. you know, if a day goes by and I haven't had a laugh and I haven't spoken to a friend or a good family member or spent time with my loved ones, then to me that is not a successful day. A successful day for me is when I've done a certain amount of work which is moving me towards my goal, but I have also had time to smile and chat to the lady like I did this morning who runs the coffee bar. I've said hello to the old couple on the street who I was walking by and had a little, you know, little chit-chat with them. I've actually genuinely stopped and appreciated the fact there was a beautiful flower that I had just seen open on the sidewalk. Mm. And I have had time to phone a friend who I know is having a difficult time right now and just consciously making time. And, okay, that might mean that I've spent 2 hours of my day not working, and that those, but to me those 2 hours are well spent.
Yeah. See, I love that. Whatever what you're talking about, to me, that's living abundantly. I mean, and also, Jiminy, you're from Europe. I lived in Europe for a while, and that is abundant living. You get to have your snack outside, go to the cafe, talk to the person in the market down the street. I mean, that to me, that is life. I mean, that is connecting people with here, like on Awakenings, we're having our chat, people in the chat, we're all, I mean, that's like, I am Queen Elizabeth right now. It's that connecting, you know. If we have that in, you know, it's that humanity and again, enjoying, and I know this sounds cliche-ish, everyone says it's the small things, it's the little things, but it really is, like you said, the bits in the middle. It really is, how are we living our life along the way? You know, how are we staying connected, you know? Tammy is saying, she does say, yes, Jiminy and Michelle, living like that is abundant living. Yeah, and also a little light thing, it's the journey, not the destination.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we hear that, but, I mean, do you so your inner guidance system, to me it sounds like Jiminy says that if you're not having some of that in, then something is off.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's off in me too, and it's a constant process. It's not, you know, I find myself some days I might have gone off down that. I'm so focused on my goal, I've kind of not had time for people or something. But I'm conscious enough now and aware to be able to say, oh, hang on, I feel this old kind of habit coming back. And you know, I lived in London for a while and was another one of those sort of androids who got up, you know, sort of walked to the office, didn't speak to anybody, sort of averted eyes on the underground, got into my little box, you know, did my work. I mean, I'm sociable, so I still spoke to people, but and I didn't have time. You know, I was busy, 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 busy. And there's a difference between being on purpose and being mm-hmm. busy. I know I used mm-hmm. the word busy at the beginning, but there is a big difference. And being conscious and doing something consciously and unconsciously. So for me, I made, again, it was a choice. I decided I didn't want to have to be working for somebody else, which meant that I was, you know, being demanded to be in at a certain time and mm-hmm. demanded to stay till a certain time of the day, and that became my life, because for me that wasn't a life. A life for me is friends and family and being able to take time out to go and, you know, to take a walk on the sunset or help a friend out and have their dogs come and stay with me for 3 weeks and take the dogs for a walk on the beach and see the sunset and just be able to appreciate what is truly here. I mean, nature to me is one of the most, I mean, it's just awesome. I mean, unbelievable. When you actually sit and watch the birds on the beach and see how they behave and how they interact with the earth, and when I live far enough away from the beach not to be able to see it all the time, but when I'm down there and it's one of those just incredible orange and, you know, pink and yellow sunsets, and every time I just cannot believe how incredible and beautiful and stunning. And to me, to take time out to go and appreciate something like that, it really makes my day, actually.
It's that appreciation, and I love what you said. Yes, there's a big difference between living on purpose and just being busy. I find even when I am, and I've been using the term fulfilled, or some people say, God, Michelle, you're so busy. And I said, no, I'm fulfilled. The things are full, mm-hmm. but I'm fulfilled. Mm-hmm. When I'm coming from that consciousness, that awareness, I do have time to stop or to do certain things. It just somehow, yeah. I don't know, maybe because, do you find that too? It's not, the schedule isn't as tight. It could be from, I suppose, another perception, but I still have that time, you know, to meet with friends or you know, take Yoshi for a walk, go to the beach, look at the, you know, even before here, and I was, you know, coming to do awakenings and was playing ball with her outside and going to do a little bit longer of a walk later, but I think it's a mindset. We have a question here. Okay, here we go. Tammy is asking you, Gemini, what tools do you have to get back to center when things get off course?
Some of the things I've just been talking about, I notice when I, you know, if I'm not eating properly, I'm not drinking lots of water, I'm not taking care of my physical form. That's a key thing. And if I suddenly find I've stopped doing those things, which happens occasionally, I will consciously go out and plan my meals for a week to make sure I've got, you know, extremely healthy food available and that I'm going to actually create those meals. Going and taking yoga classes or walks on the beach or bike ride with a girlfriend. I actually did just that 2 days ago. I was feeling a little frazzled and was starting to feel like I was being pulled into... Yeah, busyness to me means I'm in reaction mode. I'm no longer in charge and making conscious choices. I'm reacting to other things, and usually when that's happening, I'm not in center. It's me feeling like, you know, nothing's my choice anymore, and pulling myself back to hang on. I don't have to do this. Is this what I really want? And pulling myself back to that place of center and saying, okay, what am I going to choose tomorrow instead, or choose right now instead?
I like that reactive mode.
And just taking a moment. I will, you know, I used to get caught up in that for so long, and then now I'll just stop if I feel myself in that place where I'm kind of going a bit, you know, nutso. I'm like, okay, stop. Right, I'm going to just leave this. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to go and take a break and take a walk, and you know, or go and sit and chat to a friend. And when I've done one of those things that I know allows me to connect not only with myself but connect with others or connect with nature, when I come back to whatever it was I was doing before, I usually find that I'm back in that place of coming from my purpose, and rather than that thing kind of taking me over.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It is kind of something being taken over, isn't it? Because that's what brings in that reaction, you know, that reactive mode. It's interesting as you're speaking, Jimmy. I'm seeing that There is a line. There's I don't know if it's a thick line, a fine line, or whatever, a thin line. But there is a right. There is a line between being in a fulfilled or very full flow and being on purpose, and then it can tip over into this kind of drone thing. This, you know, not the Om hum, but a different hum can take over,
yeah.
Right?
And then it really you're does.
Mm-hmm.
And it creeps up on you. It's
yes.
It's
yeah.
kind of sly, actually. It's got a
kind of
nasty little way of, you know.
And I'm going, yeah. I wonder. Yeah, it is kind of sly.
And unfortunately, I mean, it's again what we've sort of been conditioned into being that way. Not all of us. I have some friends who never apparently seem to get into that state. They are, you know. I think, you know, me having worked in places like London and the big cities where everybody's like that, and you're sort of alien if you're not, almost.
Right.
But I also come from the countryside, and I grew up in an environment where people had time for each other. Everybody knew their neighbours. People sat around and popped pea pods together on their, you know, their doorstep and tended to the land in that way. And completely different kind of way of being. And what I find really interesting is that sort of what we almost came to believe was old-fashioned is really what I believe is the way, and we almost, I don't think we have a choice but to go back to that. You know, when we did have some of our own local produce and we did all share and care for each other and there was a strong sense of community and collaboration taking place, and instead we've moved to this consumerism and competition and craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And we've basically realized it doesn't really work very well for us. It doesn't work for us as individuals. It doesn't really work for us as a collective, and it definitely doesn't work for the planet.
Yeah, it doesn't. And maybe that's part of this redirection of energy or learning a new way and perhaps living more authentically.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting too. I think one of the challenges that we have is we're all used to sort of going out and finding things to fill us up, especially if we're not feeling fulfilled in what we do, and that usually involves spending money, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I had a business that sort of flopped in the UK about 10 years ago. And what happened as a result of that for me was I had to learn to really live without money for a period of time. And it was eye-opening because instead of going shopping or to the cinema or, you know, to a restaurant, I discovered that there was this whole other world that existed within my world. And that's to reappreciate just going for a walk in nature or going and sitting down by the river or going to a free art gallery or just spending time with friends and cooking a really simple meal. And to me, the irony is that actually, I'm by no means supremely wealthy, but I'm relatively comfortable. I still enjoy those things more than any of the other stuff that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I put my time. And you know, sitting watching that beautiful sunset costs nothing, but fills me up in a way that perhaps going and, you know, watching another Hollywood blockbuster wouldn't necessarily do.
I mean, when you're speaking of this, I'm thinking it's like someone had put in that chat, you know, it's knowing yourself. It's really knowing yourself and what is it that really fills you up and what, you know, what you're about individually, what really fills mm-hmm. you up, what really honors you, what really feeds you or nurtures you. I think Tammy had put it even in the self-care. I think for all of us, it's to take that time to find that. And sometimes you do really find it when you have less externally. You know, you really do find, I find too, then you can come back to if you, you know, because, you know, obviously buying things can be fun and that material, playing in the material plane is very fun too, but now you can move into that space without having, it's not about our sense of self. I know I found that for myself. It's if I get something, or want to buy something, it's not to look a certain way or appear a certain mm-hmm. way. It's because I like that.
Or impress or to
yeah.
try and be loved
yeah.
by other people. Absolutely. It's
yeah.
You do it in a detached way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think this is really interesting, just bringing back to the kind of the love concept. I mean, in the next book that I'm working on, I use this model of love to primarily explain why and how we experience loss in the way that we do. And I talk about the fact that there are four sources of love. We have a primary source of love, which is usually the person who makes us feel the most loved in our life, and that's typically either a sort of parent or a love partner, mm-hmm. or it might be our children. But the challenge is that when those people stop behaving in a certain way, we stop feeling loved by them often. Because we're humans, love is actually mostly conditional between us, to be fair. There aren't too many people I know who've mastered the art of unconditional love yet.
Not many Mother Teresa's around there, Amas,
not
are
too
there?
Many, no, exactly, yes. I know we're all trying to get there, but we've got a ways to go, I think. And then you have your secondary sources of love, who is pretty much everybody else that makes up your community, your friends, your family, your colleagues, your, remaining family members. And the same thing really applies. If they stop behaving in a way that you interpret as being loving, well, you're typically going to stop feeling loved by them and generally start wanting to do something to try and win their love back. So what's interesting is both these sources of love are actually external. And in order to often to try and get those sources of love, we do things consciously or not to try and manipulate those people often, mm-hmm. which is kitting ourselves out in design clothes or buying a certain car or basically doing things to make us mm-hmm. lovable. The other two sources of love I talk about are self-love and a spiritual source of love, both of which are internal and both of which are actually limitless, and they are also unconditional. Because whereas mm-hmm. in order to get somebody else to love us, they may love us, but typically we are also having to behave in a certain way for them to continue loving us. Yet self-love is something you can just choose to give to yourself in any moment, at any point, at any time.
Mm.
The problem is that most of us don't quite know how to do that, because it's not something we're taught to do. We're taught how to give romantic love and dish out flowers and cards and chocolates and foot massages and all those sorts of things. But
mm-hmm.
self-love is something that really is an incredibly fine art, but something that I feel, and some people are very lucky. They grew up in families where those parents had a high level of self-love and they watched and learned. But the majority, I think it's something we all struggle with.
Mm-hmm. We're learning,
and
right?
Yet, absolutely. And yet, practicing self-love and doing things like honoring yourself by taking 5 minutes to just say, it doesn't matter if I get to work 10 minutes late, I really need to sit here right now and just
mm-hmm.
take in the world, because it's going to be good for me. And, 10 minutes of work time is going to get made up, because you're going to arrive at work in a 100% better state because you gave to yourself for those 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm just putting, don't be afraid to go a bit against the grain,
Yeah.
And there's research that's actually shown that people that live more like that or work like that, and employees or companies that allow that, they actually are more productive.
Absolutely.
And, and get more done, that is more efficient and perhaps more creative in that whatever their capacity or their field is. Even if it's sales, they have more sales or better sales that stick, rather than that, I've got to get there right at this time, kind of being this machine,
Mm-hmm.
One thing Spirit Light is asking, how do you keep the middle way with love and not become too possessive? What's your thought on that, Gemini?
I'm assuming they mean in
romantic love, it sounds like. Well, it could be with anything.
People
can be possessive with a lot of things.
My answer to that is love is not a possessive thing.
Yeah.
Love isn't about being possessive. I mean, that's about fear, which is the opposite of love. If you're being possessive, it's because you, deep down, you're fearing that you don't deserve that love and that person's not going to stay around. And love, if you love that person, you trust and you have faith that they are with you for a reason, and you have no reason to be possessive over that person.
Very good point. It's so that's the middle. There's the middle ground. Inner work. Do your inner work. This possession coming in is something we feel lacking, you know.
And
fear of loss.
I mean, to give a personal example, you know, I having that sort of feeling of wanting to control or not have somebody interact with other people, it's usually about you, not about the other person, and your, you know, feeling of security or fear of rejection or one of those things. And I think that a positive way to deal with that is to not share that with the other person when you're feeling it, because the likelihood is that you're going to react in a very emotional way. But to when you feel that kind of feeling arise, is to recognize it's there and sort of say, wow, I'm feeling this way. Where does this originally come from? And by asking that question, you'll sort of be shown the first experience that led you to feel that way. Mm. And then when you've had that and you're able to recognize that it's not necessarily coming from the person you're currently with, but coming from something in your past, to then be able to share with the person you're with, look, I have this fear of you doing X, Y, Z, and I want you to know that because it's something I'm trying to work on. I'd like you to help me. And, you know, when you behave in this way, it's bringing up something from the past. And will you work with me to help clear it?
Mm-hmm. By the way, just what you said is on that, I had put in the chat room earlier on my website, the projection perception. There's actually a whole little process that people can, you know, download and print. It's exactly what you said right there, Gemini. Exactly.
Oh, shit.
Exactly. And I'm so happy you said don't say anything right then and there because you'll be reactive. You know. Don't.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Handle it first a little bit within yourself and then present it back to the. I love what. Yeah. That's and it is true, you know, what we're holding on to, right, too much is there's a fear, whether it's a person, a job, a situation, a project, you know, there is some, you know, I like what you're, there is a fear there. There's something, another time when we did that, you know, with that fear of loss, we're being triggered and we're reacting to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially I know when it comes to people, it's not with it great with anything. I mean, it's easier with an inanimate object, but if you're really overly holding on to someone or a situation, it's hard for the situation or the person to breathe.
Absolutely, and typically our reaction is to go and ask the other person to behave differently or change, when really we're the ones that are meant to be doing the work. And, you know, instead we sort of go and dump it on the other person and say, you've got to stop doing this because it's making me feel this way. You know, and really the responsibility is to stand up and say, wow, I have this feeling, and you know, you need to go into sort of detective mode. Where does this come from? Is it really this person, or is it something that happened before that I'm now running a pattern on because it's
running a pattern,
you know? And to first of all be able to identify that, and then you can at least say, okay, no, it is something this person's doing, or it was something from the past. So you have the information. Once you have the information, you can then look at how you can work to resolve it or clear it, or, you know, if it's something. And there's a fine line here, definitely, because sometimes that person might just be doing something that's really unacceptable. And, you know, that doesn't, it's not always just means that you have to bend and work and clear. And but if you can start with yourself, but if you really feel that it's more the other person, then the clearing is to clear that person out of your life, and also sometimes that is necessary.
You know, what you've been speaking of is, so, I'm going to sneeze. I thought I had a sneeze anyway. What you're speaking of is so important. I did sneeze. I muted it though. I got a mute button, everyone.
Bless you. That's all right. It's because you were talking about cleaning things out of your life. That's
I know, exactly. It sneezes on the truth. Boy, that's true. But you know what? I hope millions of people listen to what we've been talking about today and what you've been sharing, because we cannot go to that, or you can't, or individually and collectively that next level until people really get this and start living this. And I think sometimes, you know, as being consciously on a path, a lot of times people want the fluff. They want the light. They want this happening to them. They want the channeling. They want the reading. And their life is a mess. And unless people move into that space of that right relationship, right livelihood, by taking back those projections and moving into perception, and like what you're talking about, Gemini, with the love, getting to the true love, the expanded consciousness, the way of loving and being. Number one, when you're in the clutchy phase of whatever it is, when holding on, our vibrational frequency is not expanded or raised. And we're so meant to get this in this Aquarian age. I mean, we're all here to shift this pattern so that the type of love that you're talking about, Gemini, that's going to be, at some point, that will be common. You know, even though it's not now, but that's where we're all going, that this is now common, you know, expression of love, and people are living this way. So, but it's not going to happen unless we all start doing it individually, I guess is what I'm wanting to say.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting. I'm a big fan of Marianne Williamson's work. And she'd written had triggered something in me recently. I was, it was a piece she wrote about peace, actually. And the idea that, you know, these sort of people on peace marches being really angry, and, you know, that there's a war going on. It starts within each of us. If you can be peaceful and loving within yourself, and each and every one of us makes a choice to be that way, and it's not an easy choice. It takes work every second of every minute of every day, because, you know, despite the fact that I write and I teach and I speak about love, I have to work at it. I'm not, you know, I'm not Jesus Christ. I mean, it requires...
Well, remember, Jesus Christ threw... Yeah, but remember, he threw somebody off the roof. Jesus Christ, he had his temper, too. He threw someone off the roof and threw those beggars or whatever, the money people, money changers, you know, so he had his...
Well, maybe they deserved it, but anyway. It's, interestingly, the same thing seems to be happening again, only on a rather larger scale. And, you know, and I think that...
Wow, that's true. Yeah.
Sometimes people do deserve to be judged for something in a way. There has to be a sense of justice too, and it's not all about it's not all about being endlessly forgiving and letting everybody just get away with everything, because then we would be probably wouldn't be in such a great state either. But
I like that accountability. To me, the forgiving is we just move on from it. But I think definitely, especially in the Aquarian age, because Aquarius has so much to do also with that water bearer is a lot about, you know, balance and justice, and the Aquarian is very objective. You do have to call something. You have to have that accountability. And like the I Ching says, we don't hold the person in a mental prison, but you better say, you know, you better hold them to what they did and call them out, be able to move on. But I agree with you, this kind of wilting or whimpering or it's okay or whatever, those days are over. It's like, boom, you did boom, and then move on, you know. But don't hold on. How's that? Move on, but don't hold on.
But it also requires us to be real with each other, and that's something I think that's very scary for a lot of people. But it's also absolutely necessary. I mean, you have to be real. If somebody has... again, there's another one of those kind of gray areas here, which is, you know, it's not about dumping your shit on somebody else. You've got to be real and say, you just did something which kind of, you know, didn't feel like it was integrous, or, you know, I felt like you were trying to do, you know, manipulate me or something, whatever it may be, and express what's going on. But take responsibility for the fact that you have played a part in it too, and it's not entirely up to the other person to change. You both have to work at things. And that applies to, you know, all relationships, work, you know, lovers, family members, friends, right across the board. But if you're not speaking your truth, you're not being true to yourself, and that would be reflecting in your relationships and the things that are showing up in your life if you're not doing that too.
And that's what you said. Yeah, it's reflecting in our relationships and what we're doing in our life. And again, that dovetails to that right, you know, relationship, right livelihood, which it all starts with us, as you're saying. And we have a few minutes remaining, and I have put in the chat your book, Your Legacy of Love. And of course, we've been talking mm-hmm. about love in the, to me, in the most expanded order, Gemini, which has just been so enlightening. You know, for everyone to look at love in this way that is much more embracing and real. I love what you said about being real. Can you just touch a bit on the book, Your Legacy of Love, for our listeners so they can get a sense of that? And, of course, they can go to yourlegacyoflove.co.uk
yeah,
also for information.
And it's also on Amazon, both amazon.co.uk and amazon.com as well. The book is actually it's an exploration into looking at how we prepare for the worst in our society. And typically, we're encouraged to write a will and sort of identify what we're going to do with our financial assets and how we're going to pass those on to our survivors should the worst happen. The problem with that is that when you lose somebody, you know, through death, frankly, inheriting their cash, their house, or their car does absolutely nothing to help with the loss that you're experiencing and the pain and the grief. And just touching on what we talked about, the reason for that is because you've lost that person's love. I mean, they've left. They've left the planet. Mm-hmm. They're not here to love you, and you can't love them back in the same way anymore. And that.
So you're saying what we're reacting to, we're responding to is the loss of the love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And I mean, when somebody dies, I mean, you literally feel a deep wound inside your heart, which, you know, I almost believe is the disconnection of the cord that exists between the two of you, and you've had that cord ripped out of you because that person is no longer here to see and feel and share with in the way that you did when they were present. So. Two things. I did a piece of research where I actually asked people, if one of your parents died, what would you prefer, to inherit their wealth or a letter saying how much they loved you? And not surprisingly, over 90% of people expressed the wish for the loving letter. So building on that piece of research, I really went into exploring the idea that we have emotional assets, and that our emotional assets combined with our financial assets will express our total wealth that we have as individuals. And I define those as the unique elements that make us who we are, our stories, our lessons, the values that we have, and more importantly, our love and affection. And the concept for creating your legacy of love is to be able to capture your emotional assets and find ways to leave them for your children and your partner, your lover, your wife, your friends, so that if something were to happen to you, they would actually have this continuing bond of your love, which would allow them to reconnect and tap into that love that you once shared. And by doing that, this would help to minimize their grief and provide them with this ongoing legacy that will help to support them emotionally should something happen to you.
I love that. In a way, it's and maybe that's why it's Legacy of Love, but I can feel there's an acknowledgement of the thread of love that does go on.
Absolutely.
And of course,
yes.
Yeah. And of course, I guess because we are in physical form, we want something physical,
mm-hmm.
you know, that expresses that love.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I know there are many people who've lost somebody who still feel very loved by that person. I mean, this book is primarily for parents because, you know, it's somewhat different if something happens to you and you leave behind young children and even adult children, you know, for them to just have something that in no uncertain terms says, you know, my darling, you meant everything to me. I was so proud of you. I love you so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I really wish the best for you. I want you to be everything that you can truly be in your life. But the impact of those words captured on paper in black and white,
mm-hmm.
that that person can pull out and read over and over again, could be the difference between that person's, you know, having a life filled with self-esteem and not. Could be the difference between them believing that they can go on to, you know, run the country or not. I mean, it's extremely powerful stuff. There's a section in the book which I talk about, which is, you know, meaningful words win over money. And again, I don't think this just relates to the end of life. I mean, this also relates to the here and now and how we go about living our lives. And are we choosing to live a legacy of love, or are we choosing to live a legacy where we're focused on a life, sorry, where we're focused on financial assets?
Mm. Yeah, it's really shifting that, those how we're looking at what is an asset. You know, mm-hmm. what is really, you know, important to us. I so agree with you. Most people that I've talked to, that something of a letter, or they find a letter that was written to them from the one that has crossed over. They are just so ecstatic. I mean, you know, touched, ecstatic. It's just like that person comes alive again, you know, in finding something like that. So the legacy of love is actually about consciously doing that and putting something together, or things together, that after your crossing, that you will live on longer in this physical form through whatever letters or pictures or music or something that's communicating this love bond
to your survivors. Absolutely,
your survivors.
Yeah, there's actually five things I talk about. One is capturing your life story in whatever form. That can be using, you know, video diary or writing your memoirs or something to that effect. Because again, you know, we all want to know where we came from, and you know, all these wonderful stories that you have within your family and the traditions that you have. Writing those down, recording them so that they can be passed on to the next generation is extremely important, especially for children who are ultimately going to want to know where they came from and why they are the way that they are.
Mm-hmm.
I also talk about the idea of musical memories, which is, an extremely powerful form, not only to communicate to your loved ones how you feel about them, but also to help give them something that will motivate them or heal them or bring them out of a sort of, you know, the blues, really. The idea that we could, you know, you could create a compilation of music, sort of three or four carefully chosen songs that you would leave them on a sort of, you know, recorded on a CD that they would be able to play over and over again. And maybe with a little note which explains why you chose those songs. All of us have sat down and listened to a song, and it instantly takes you back to a memory of, mm. you know, a great time you have with somebody. And I think there's no better way to connect in with your loved ones than using music, actually, in that way. I also talk about the idea of, you know, planning your life celebration and being able to create your sort of final farewell party in a way that resonates with you. We've sort of, I think, moved away a little bit from the traditional funeral, which can often be quite a somber affair, into much more of a
celebration. You know, Gemini, we'll have to have you back again to talk more about love. And
that would be my pleasure.
And you really brought so much today, but it was so well rounded, and actually a more expanded, more conscious, a more loving way to view love and live love. I really like it. I really like a lot of what you've had to say and share with us. We're getting thank yous in the chat. Thank you very much. You know, great conversation. Learned a lot. Thank you. So thank you from everyone in the chat and everyone that's listening via phone, iTunes, and other ad spaces. Thanks for being with us, Gemini. We've been speaking with Gemini Adams, author, healer, facilitator, author of Your Legacy of Love. And you can reach her at yourlegacyoflove.co.uk. Thanks so much, Gemini.
Thank you, Michelle. Bye.
Bye. And remember, as Gemini Adams said, that love can move into an expanded awareness of love by dancing yourself, aligning into your purpose, having that sense of purpose, living more fulfilled, and automatically align you to right livelihood and right relationship. I'm Michelle Mache, and you've been listening and participating in Awakenings, part of the Converging Flow. You're now listening to a bit of Sunrise, The Ancient Sun by Thunderbeat. It's been great connecting with all of you. Now go out and shine your light, share your insight, and until next time, keep awake.